Hi there, I'm Meredith Lake. Welcome to Soul Search, a new show here on RN. We'll be taking up the conversation about faith and meaning where the spirit of things left off. As Rachel Conn enjoys her retirement, we'll journey on, exploring the roomy world of contemporary religion and spirituality from the inside out. It's great to have your company. Well, at this time of year, we think a lot about change and renewal. But what kind of change are young Australian Christians imagining for themselves and for the nation? How do they navigate the tricky terrain between Christianity and colonialism?
I grew up knowing about my culture, proud of my culture. And then when I was in year 10 at high school, that's where I first encountered God and decided to follow Jesus, which for me, I never thought that was something I would do because my view of God was the colonizer's God, something that's trying to take our culture away from us. So for a long time, I felt this tension. I didn't know how you could really be Aboriginal and Christian, or I didn't have many role models to show me that. It was really God who kept speaking to me, saying, I was here before the boats. I have been in your culture for thousands of years.
That's Gomeroi woman Bianca Manning, and later she'll tell us why she and two friends, Brooke and Helen, went travelling around the country holding church services to mark Australia Day. We'll also hear from Joanna Cruikshank, who grew up in a missionary family in South Asia in the 1980s. She's now senior lecturer in history at Deakin University, Melbourne, where she teaches about religion, gender, and race. But first, a story that's fascinated me for a long time about Boorong, probably the first Indigenous Australian to encounter Christianity and its Bible, back in the 1780s. Hi, Joe, and welcome to Soul Search.
Hi, Meredith. Thanks so much for having me on.
At this time of year, we might reflect a bit more than usual on the historical encounter between Indigenous Australians and Europeans, which included, of course, the arrival of Christianity and the Bible. And a little known part of that encounter involved a young woman, Boorong or Boorong. Who was she? I wonder what can you tell us about her?
Well, from the colonial sources, we gather that Boorong was a Burramattagal woman. When the colonists first arrived, she was living in what is now Parramatta. And she was probably 10 or 11. We're not sure exactly of her age. And no doubt she would have heard almost immediately about the arrival of these newcomers. But her life was really impacted by the colonists when the governor sent a group of marines and surveyors out to her country and established a settlement and a military outpost there.
Yeah, there's basically a military garrison set up there, isn't there?
Yes. I mean, I think you can say it's an invasion, and certainly she and her family would have experienced it that way, this arrival of armed men. And so she and her family are dispossessed from their traditional country at that point.
I was wondering about that and what the arrival of colonists meant for her people. But also there's an existential and a cultural kind of shift involved here too. And I wonder if we can just talk a bit about those religious elements. I mean, the colonists weren't a homogenous group in terms of their faith, but there were some zealous evangelicals on that first fleet, including the chaplain, Richard Johnson, and his wife, Mary. How did they come into contact with Boorong?
Well, in 1789, the year after the colonists arrived, there was a devastating outbreak of probably smallpox amongst the Eora, and around half of the Aboriginal inhabitants of the region died. Boorong was one of those who caught smallpox, and she was brought into the settlement at Sydney Cove for treatment. Richard and his wife, Mary, took her in once she was somewhat recovered, and she lived with them for about 18 months. One of the colonists recorded that the chaplain was keen to learn Wurrung's language, but it seems as though, in fact, most of the language learning happened in the other direction. He and Mary taught Wurrung some English and taught her the Lord's Prayer, introduced her to the Bible, as well as caring for her physically as she recuperated from that terrible disease.
Mm. The encounter you're describing there, Jo, it kind of makes Wurrung probably the first Indigenous Australian to have a substantial encounter with Christianity. That's pretty significant. Why isn't her story better known?
I don't think she plays the kind of central political role that someone like her later husband, Bennelong, plays. So for that reason, perhaps she hasn't been as significant in the history books. But also I think the fact that she's a woman and therefore the role that she did play, particularly her role as a go-between, a mediator, is less obvious or has been less obvious to Western historians who have tended to see political roles as being the category of male leaders.
Can you tell me more about her political involvement? What did that involve for her? What were the consequences for her?
Well, again, we have to read that back by trying to read against the grain, really, of the colonial sources, because they don't necessarily identify Wurrung as a significant political player. But during this early period of settlement, the colonists are desperately seeking mediators, and they using a number of different methods of trying to engage with the clans more broadly. So most famously, they kidnap a number of Aboriginal men and try to use them as mediators, and that has limited success. Wurrung seems to have quite actively taken on the role of mediator. She works alongside Johnson to engage with Eora communities. She acts as an interpreter and explains various events within the Eora life to the Johnsons.
But Wurrung didn't convert to Christianity, though, did she, Jo?
The Johnsons certainly don't think that she converted, and they are quite disappointed that she seems to go back to her people, that she returns to all of her cultural, traditional practices, all of her law keeping, which from their point of view is a failure of their attempt to convert her. But of course, we don't know really what she took away from her time with them and her encounter with them. Certainly, she makes a decisive choice, as does Bennelong, to remain with her people rather than staying within colonial society.
And in their own ways, they've kind of had this close look at the white camp at Sydney and apparently walked out and apparently rejected what they've seen there. But their lives come together, don't they? What happens to Wurrung and Bennelong?
Well, after Bennelong returns from England, where he spends some time, he eventually marries Wurrung, who's his third wife, and they have a child together who...
That's Dickie Bennelong.
Who's Dickie, yeah.
Although Wurrung kind of drops out of the colonial record, and we don't... Yeah, we don't know a lot about what those later years were like from her point of view, do we?
No, I mean, she's really living in those last years of her life along with Bennelong in a world that's been changed drastically. And we know from the description that the Johnsons make of her that she and Bennelong as well, they are practicing Aboriginal law and culture, but they're doing that in a vastly altered context where that is increasingly difficult.
Yeah, this complicated history that you're outlining, how might an understanding of that kind of difficult history contribute, do you think, to today's arguments about race and religion and nation?
Well, I think we can't have those conversations without talking about Christianity, and I think that has been obvious for decades, even if that's simply a matter of condemning Christianity and its place within the dispossession and oppression of Aboriginal people. I don't think anyone would disagree that Christian leaders have played a really central role in relations between the white invaders and the Aboriginal original inhabitants of the country.
That's Joanna Cruikshank from Deakin University. We'll hear more of her personal story as a former missionary kid in just a moment. Right now, you're with me, Meredith Lake, on Soul Search, RN's new show about religion, spirituality, and the difference it makes in our lives. On air, online, and via the ABC Listen app. For historian Joanna Cruikshank, questions of race and religion aren't just academic. Her parents were Australian missionaries in Bangladesh, so even in childhood she had to think deeply and carefully about issues of colour and creed. I asked her what her family were doing overseas and what values they carried with them.
Well, my father was a theological lecturer, so he got a job in a theological college in Bangladesh, and my mother is a doctor. They went to Bangladesh in 1978. I lived there with them for the first 6 years and then went off to boarding school in South India, travelling back and forth to Bangladesh during the year.
Wow, that's an unusual upbringing, I suspect, for many white Australians of our generation. Mm. I wonder how aware you were in that period of your life of difference, especially of colour and of creed.
Look, I think I was extremely aware of those things, in part because my parents have always reflected fairly deeply on questions of power and how you can offer support or help to people when you have privilege, although I guess the language of privilege wasn't the one that I was familiar with. And so I think from very early on, those questions have been ones that I've kept coming back to.
Interesting when you say it wasn't the language so much of privilege that you had. What language did you have? Was it a religious, even a theological language around your dining table?
Look, I think it probably was. The notion of humility, ideas of service and justice, those were central to the faith that my parents professed. And I saw them trying to work out what it meant to be humble and to serve in a context where they had, certainly in material terms, so much more than many of the people around them.
Are there particular sensitivities or even religious convictions, intellectual views that you think trace back to your upbringing in that context?
I think it was very clear to me from an early age that my skin colour, as the most obvious marker of my privilege, gave me a whole set of advantages, and that there were millions and millions of people in the world who whose life experience was profoundly different from mine and whose worldview was profoundly different from mine. I think that creates, if not a relativism, at least a willingness to recognise that most people don't see the world the same way that I do, and that I needed to have humility about that. On the other hand, I think my father worked in a theological college that was run by Bengali Christians. They were
He was their employee in that sense.
He was their employee, although he was paid by an international organisation. But that was an organisation run, primarily staffed by Bengali Christians. They had established it to serve the church in Bangladesh, which is in a very great minority. So
it's quite a different model, really, to the one we were talking about with Johnson and Burong.
Absolutely.
There's been a total reassessment, in a way, of this relationship of Christianity and colonialism across differences of colour as well as creed.
That's right.
I think the structural parts of this, though, are really fascinating. I remember reading a piece of yours a year or two ago. It had a really startling title, Confessions of a White Supremacist. It was actually about you as the white supremacist. Is that still the way you see things?
What I was arguing there was that it's incredibly naive for anyone who has grown up in a system that privileges whiteness, where whiteness comes with cultural and economic power. It is incredibly naive to think that somehow we have escaped internalizing that at a really deep level. I wrote that out of frustration that Australians, white Australians, were so quick to deny racism. You know, I think that unwillingness to really recognize how deep the structures of racism go in our society, but then, of course, also within us as individuals. I find that very frustrating in our society as a whole, and I wanted to make the point that I see those things within myself and I need to actively fight against them all the time.
You also describe it in that piece as evil, and that's such a loaded moral, even theological term. How is this a religious question?
Well, I think anything that dehumanizes people, anything that allows us to see other people as less than us, that is evil, regardless of the guise that it comes in. And that is the tendency that I see in myself, are attitudes and assumptions deep down which encourage me to see people of colour as less than myself in some way or another. I think that is evil.
And we've been talking about kind of the complicated role and legacy of Christianity in the creation, but also the subversion of these kinds of ideas and systems. But I wonder if there are constructive ways that particular faith tradition, the Christian tradition, might help us grapple with the kind of structural racism we're talking about.
As a white person, I think there are a couple of key theological categories that are important. The first one is repentance. Repentance as the turning away from evil, and that is both an individual matter and a collective matter within both the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian New Testament. There are examples both of individual turning away from evil and seeking forgiveness, and the collective, the community. I think it's also really important to say that we also need hope. And that, to me, is the other resource that Christianity offers, is the notion that repentance is worthwhile, that things can be better, that relationships can be healed, and that the fact that we have such an atrocious track record doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to just continue to repeat those practices and habits.
And what about history? A figure like Burong, who we talked about earlier, and probably the first, you know, Indigenous Australian to have a substantial encounter with Christianity. Why do we need to understand her stories like that? And what does it add to the narrative of what it might mean to be an Australian now?
When we look at the examples of encounters between Indigenous people and settlers, whether they were Christian or not, we see people engaging in the context of unequal power relations, but also engaging as people. And that teaches us what not to do, but it can also give us examples of what to do, of how people did find points of genuine meeting and encounter within a context that really made that quite unlikely.
There's definitely a lot of food for thought there. Thank you so much for joining me on this first episode of Soul Search.
My pleasure.
That's historian Joanna Cruickshank from Deakin University with her reflections on race, power, repentance and hope. I'm Meredith Lake and you're listening to Soul Search, a new show about the search for meaning. This week, the tricky terrain between colonialism and Christianity.